The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello.
Hola.
Privet.
Guten Tag.
Welcome to the Normal Not Normal podcast with me, Oliver Phelps.
And me, James Phelps.
And in this series, we are talking to some of our favourite people, finding out what normal means to them, and really, does normal even exist?
That's right, and I'm very excited today because this is episode 2 of the new season. Thank you so much for the great response for last week. It was a great little episode, and I really enjoyed that we're now going to do every other week. We're going to get stories from you guys in as well, and just have a random chit-chat, listen to your stories, your did you knows, everything like that. Thank you so much for sending them in, and send them in for next week. Quick recap on the email address is normalnotnormalpodcast@gmail.com. Send them in and we'll make sure to get you on the show.
Exactly that. Now, today's guest is the award-winning children's author Jacqueline Wilson. Her books have helped shape the childhood of millions and millions of people all over the world, including my own.
I remember reading Tracy Beaker, which then went on to be a hit TV series. Double Act, which was a huge book, obviously, because it's about twins, which means a lot to us. The Suitcase Kid, which I still remember to this day. Many, many others that she's written. She's written more than 100 books. One of the most influential authors of, I'd say, the 20th century, got to be said. So we're so thankful to have her on the show.
And Jacqueline's books are known for tackling big issues like divorce, adoption, drug and alcohol abuse, poverty, and many more topics like that. But she manages to create a safe space to explore these issues, especially if you think at the end of the day they are children's books.
Very much so. When reading it as a kid, they were kind of like the in-between books, weren't they? They were kind of like the Potters of the day. Obviously not about magic, but the way they're written and that kind of stuff. So if you've never read a Jacqueline Wilson book, I definitely recommend picking one of them up and just giving it a go because they are so easy. In fact, she's rewritten The Railway Children recently, so give that a look in as well. But she'll tell us more about that. So without any further ado, here is Jacqueline Wilson.
Jacqueline, I've got to be honest with you, I suppose not just James and myself, but many of us grew up with obviously Tracy Beaker and lots of other books that you've done. And I suppose also watching the BBC TV series adaptation of Tracy Beaker, which, funny enough, one of our best mates, Luke Youngblood, played Ben in the original series.
Really? Oh, great.
Yeah, so he was doing that while we were doing the second Potter, I think it was. But I saw recently as well how it was re-released on iPlayer and has broken all sorts of streaming records, yeah, because obviously it's loved by parents now, and obviously they're introducing it to their kids.
Which is wonderful for me.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
And also, I wrote two books about Tracy grown up with a daughter of her own, and so they're doing a sort of My Mum Tracy Beaker lovely series with the very grown-up Danny and Montana, who played Justine Littlewood, and several other brilliant actresses. And it's very rare that you get a television programme that can actually have little flashbacks of footage 25 years ago when the main characters were little kids. And I just think it's great fun to watch.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, in terms of both obviously the newest series, but also as well the original, did you have any say in the casting or how the story progression went at all?
I never have anything to do with the casting. Would that I did. In all the various adaptations I've had of my books, I've always begged to be in the corner when somebody is organising casting, because I'd love to see how it goes. I'd love to see how all the children perform. I've promised I would even sort of pretend to be somebody else, but no, they won't let me. I don't know whether I put everybody off or what. So I didn't know at all who was going to be in the cast, but I got to invited when they were filming the first series, and there were a whole lot of kids running around when I got there, not only the main cast but a whole load of extras, and so it's a sea of children, and the director said, okay, pick out the one that's your Tracy. And I didn't know if they were going to stick to the way Tracy looks in the books or what, so I didn't have a clue. But I just looked round and there was this young girl with attitude, with her hands on her hips. And I thought, oh, that has to be Tracy. And it was. And, you know, I was just taken aback by Danny's just absolute nailing that part completely. It's so interesting that she's turned out to be, you know, a really brilliant actress who, you know, has taken the grown-up Tracy and actually run with it. I feel a little sorry for Danny, because it must be very, very difficult if she's going for other parts of things. People say, oh, yes, Tracy Beaker, and putting her in a certain slot. I mean, it must happen to so many actors if they're really distinct in a part. But I must admit, I'm very glad for me. This is great.
You mentioned there your My Mum Tracy Beaker, which you wrote in 2018, and then obviously has gone on to be a great show as well. What was it like making an older version of the character? Because I can't imagine there's many authors get the opportunity to go back to an original character and then thinking where they are, what are they doing now? Like how was that? Was it quite moving for you in a way?
I love doing it. And I wanted Tracy, most importantly, to become a good mum. Because so many people think that if you've been brought up in care, you haven't been adequately parented yourself, that is going to be a repeating pattern. And that's absolutely not the case. I've known many people who've grown up in care, and often it makes you even more determined to be a good parent yourself. And so I knew that Tracy would still have a few anger issues, say, but never would she, you know, shout and scream at her own daughter. I was tempted in some ways to make Tracy a huge professional success, but I didn't think it would be necessarily realistic. I have had a lot of conversation, particularly with some a leaving care group in Scotland, who actually introduced me to a visiting American care leaver who is now training to go up in space. And I can see that people can do amazing things. But I thought, particularly one like Tracy, who doesn't buckle down at school and left school early, it would be a bit unlikely. So I wanted her to be a fantastic parent first. And then as the story progresses, Tracy comes into her own, and she's a very bright girl, and she's becoming an expert now in the whole antiques business and having fun too. So I thought this is a happy compromise.
Yeah, as you said, I suppose it's keeping that level of realism to it, and also people want to see, yeah, some of their own environments and say reflected in the story. So I mean, like, you've never really run away or shied away from exploring like tougher parts in your books, like a character whose parents had passed away, or as you said, like even like adoption, addiction issues,
yes,
mental health problems, all that type of thing. Because there's almost a case where children and young adults books should be a safe space. But I'm sure many of our listeners have found a lot of comfort in your writing, where it doesn't shy away from that. It may be like the first, it's like someone in a very sheltered upbringing, shall we say, it may be the first time they'll be aware of it, and yet other people will read it and think, oh, that stuff happens as well.
I think that's a very good point to make, because we're all so different and had such different upbringings. I try and always make it from the child's point of view and in the first person. So, keep out any really upsetting details. If you're a child who's gone through something terrible, you might get a hint or two, yes. But if you're not, it doesn't occur at all. And I try and have a lot of humour in my books. I mean, to start with, I think having a sense of humour, even a very black sense of humour, helps you get through really difficult times anyway. But I don't think there's anything really to upset anybody. As far as I can remember, truthfully, I've never had a character actually take drugs. They might be aware of drugs, but they don't take drugs. There's no sort of explicit sexual scene.
Yeah.
Nothing that would make even the most old-fashioned parent blanch, as far as I'm aware. I mean, in all the many years I've been writing, I think I've had one letter complaining that somebody, from a child, saying she didn't like it and it made her unhappy, whichever book it was. And I've had about a handful of parents complaining about this or that. But for the vast majority, you know, I've just had nothing but, you know, thank you so much for writing about this subject or that subject.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when I was a child reading your work, it definitely, I related to it a lot. I trusted it a lot. I trusted the story a lot more because it's believable.
Oh, that's good.
And obviously, like we said, we've read quite a few of your books. Trace Big, obviously. Double Act, obviously, being twins, really like that one.
Now, did I get it right about twins?
I think for the most part, yeah.
Good.
Definitely. There's the license to do naughty things and try and get away with it.
Which never stops.
I mean, I think that's every singleton's dream to be able to do that.
I think so. Not to the degree that those guys get up to. We never got up to that much trouble, but we definitely had times where we liked to have fun. But I always remember the one book which I still think about quite often, actually, is The Suitcase Kid. And I remember when we first read that in primary school, you know, and the whole class has to read a little bit and go from there. And first of all, I used to hate reading out loud.
Oh, it's so nerve-wracking, isn't it?
I know, it's like a torturous thing to do. But I remember when reading that in school, it was the first book I took home to read. I wanted to finish the story before everybody else because I enjoyed it so much. And although I couldn't really relate to Andy, the main character, in regards to, like, my parents weren't divorced or getting divorced or anything like that, but it definitely helped me understand friends whose parents had got divorced or something, because it's not, as a kid, it's hard to understand what's going on with other people. Do you think that when you write a story, are you doing it just to tell a story, or is there always some way of you want to help people understand the situation or let people know that they're not the first person to go through it and you are okay if that happens?
I got the idea of The Suitcase Kid because I was talking to a mum outside the school while we were waiting to pick up our daughters, and I knew that she and her husband were splitting up, and I said, how's it going? And she was saying, oh, it's awful. She said, but the wonderful thing is, so-and-so, her daughter, said, hasn't got a clue, happy as Larry. And I actually knew that she'd been telling my daughter all sorts of sad things and how worried she was and she couldn't sleep at night. And I think I wanted to show children that they might be pretending rather valiantly to mum or dad that, you know, things are fine, but actually it is upsetting. And more than anything else, I didn't want the story to end with mum and dad getting back together again.
Yeah.
Because generally when there's been a big breakup, you don't get back together again. And certainly not because some child has done some valiant thing to get you together. I wanted to show that, yes, it hurts. And, you know, you're always going to wish your parents were together, but you can get through it. And you know, find that you can manage with two families if that's the way it pans out. You can find other adults to relate to, you can make new friends, and that, you know, it isn't, I mean, the awful thing is children don't have any perspective. If they're really hurting now, they have no idea that in a year's time they might feel a lot better, which, you know, I think is a good message.
Yeah, definitely. And as a book, it's something which I always remember bits of and think of. I always remember the line where she says, parents row, but this was more than normal.
Yes.
Rowing. I can remember thinking, wow, all parents have a little row every so often. I didn't know that. I just assumed that it was just my mum and dad behind the door. Just to be clear, everybody, they don't row all the time. Like they're still together. But it's
especially now we've left home. Yeah,
yeah. But it just little things like that. And it's, I think that's what's great about a lot of your writing, is that it's kind of that. Trust me, we know what you're going through, and this is normal.
Yeah, I find it really interesting though that now. I get a lot of emails from people kind of your age, and but it's as if I'm some kind of agony aunt, and they tell me about some problem in their lives, and I feel tremendously flattered. But you see, in fiction, you can have a problem, and then you can be Mrs. Magic and solve it for your characters. But yeah, in yeah. real life, you know, I haven't got a clue what to advise. Exactly. My own life has been a bit sort of up and down anyway. So it's just, well, it's a compliment, I think.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going back a bit, I know we touched on it earlier, but obviously with Tracy Beaker and how obviously revisiting the character and revisiting the story on the TV as well may have been a chance to set some things right. Because I know there was a story that a couple of members in the cast were annoyed when Cam got married to a man when the character was gay. But then in the most recent series, my mum Tracy Beaker all's put right when she's married to a woman. So obviously, not only is that a massive roller coaster to be going on, but what was that like for you being probably seen inadvertently in the middle of?
I found it really quite interesting. I had always imagined Cam being gay. But bearing in mind that the story of Tracy Beaker came out, I think, 30 years ago, maybe even 31 right. years ago. The television series came out about 5 years later. Generally speaking, you didn't really talk about gay couples in books then, whereas I think a whole generation on, we're much more cool about same-sex partnerships. And so I kind of hinted here and there, but didn't do anything about it. And then I think it was interesting with the television adaptation at that time suddenly to have Cam being married to a man. But then there was a discussion afterwards and they thought, no, I don't really think this is working, and maybe they didn't have the right storylines or whatever. And so there was apparently a little discussion about, well, what are we going to do then? And they dealt with it. And just for the next series, and it was just so snappy, and that somebody said to Cam, what about so-and-so, whatever he's called, and he just, history. And that was it. Yeah, no long-winded perfect, explanation. Perfect way. And I thought, that's the way to deal with things.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, as you said, though, like, even, 25, 30 years ago, that wasn't a big, it was still a taboo subject, wasn't it, that, you know, two people of the same sex would be in a relationship together?
I mean, in the soaps, I think they'd started dealing with sort of gay attraction, stuff like that. But it was always a kind of, you know, this is what it's all about, rather than, this is just a fact of life, so-and-so lives with so-and-so or whatever. And I think I have to keep reminding myself, because as you get older and things unsettle you and you don't know how to use, say, modern technology or whatever, you kind of think back to the good old days. But actually, they weren't really that great, particularly. I think young people now are much more open-minded, much more relaxed about an awful lot of things. So I think that, you know, is a great, great leap forward.
Yeah. Yeah,
just sticking with that slightly. When you wrote Love, Frankie, which was a book that included a gay relationship, and then it made people look at your own relationship with your partner, Trish, who you've been with for 18 years.
I knew that would be inevitable.
What was like? Was that strange for you, for people like making it a big story?
Well, I was quite surprised, but also knew that papers, particularly the more ones that just want your personal story or whatever, would probably ask all sorts of questions. And so it was decided, right, pick your journalist and the newspaper that you want to give a proper interview, a long, lengthy interview with. And then, you know, if you don't want to talk to anybody else afterwards, you can just say, look, I've dealt with this issue. It's not history. And it was just lovely. As far as I'm aware, I mean, I'm not personally on Twitter. I mean, there's fans of Jacqueline Wilson on Twitter, but I'm not. So I have no idea if people protected me from people saying shock, horror, how can you say this or not? Who knows? But certainly it was very easy for me. And also, I kind of almost have joined a trend without realizing it, because, you know, I was married to a guy for about 30 years, got married at 19. How mad is that? Wow. And I was always very open to any kind of partnership, but, you know, didn't really think, you know, I wasn't sort of repressed or anything. But just then that marriage broke up, and then I was on my own for about 6 years. And, you know, that was okay. A bit lonely at times, but mostly okay. And then, I don't know, this is quite embarrassing. Then I met Trish and I thought, oh, she's wonderful. And I mean, I didn't expect this to happen to me, but it did. And now we've been together nearly 20 years. So I like to tell any middle-aged woman who's really, particularly if her marriage has just broke up, and you might think, oh God, what am I going to do now? I'd say, just never know what's going to happen. Because I remember my 50th birthday, and I was thinking, well, everything's just going to go downhill from now. Nothing more exciting is going to happen to me. And amazing things happen. And I'm a sort of respectable old lady. I'm not really going to shock anybody, I don't think.
So I know that a lot of people who listen to our show, they're very creative. And there's quite a few people who write or want to become writers. Do you have like a set process on how you go from thinking of an idea to then putting it on page? And do you have a set way of doing things?
I like to have not only the book that I'm currently writing, but I like to have the one that's coming after it, just some germ of an idea, so that as I'm finishing one book, and particularly while I'm rewriting it, then I can develop the next idea in my head. I am kind of a compulsive writer, in that the moment I've finished a book, the very next day I like to start a new one and just carry on like that, because I miss it so. I mean, I just feel that it's my other life, and I would feel I was only living half a life if I wasn't writing all the time. I mean, all those hours wasted standing in supermarket queues or waiting over the phone, and you just hear that awful music played again and again and again, and you are 45th in the queue or whatever.
Your call's very important to us.
It gives you something to think about. I mean, it's always difficult, but I rehearse in my head the first paragraph always, because that is that big, you're kind of committed to it. And I know you can just sort of press on the computer and it all blots out again, but for me, I like to start with something that will hook them so they want to carry on and know what happens next.
So, I mean, I can imagine that obviously living a lot of your life in the shoes of a child and create characters and stories like that. But what was your normal growing up? I remember reading somewhere that you started writing at 17, was it?
Yeah, I started earning my living at 17 as a writer because that's always what I wanted to be from when I was about 6 years old. And I was forever writing in little notebooks at home. And I was an only child too, which although I had friends at school, I never was allowed to have friends back in the flat. And so I played sort of imaginary games a lot of the time. And basically that was wonderful training for being a writer. I don't come from a posh background at all. Brought up on a council estate and everybody just left school at 16 when they'd just done their equivalent of GCSEs. And my mum didn't want me to work in a factory or whatever, and so suggested I do a secretarial training course at the local tech. I didn't want to be a secretary, but all I wanted to do was be a writer. And so she said triumphantly, well, there, you need to type if you're going to be a writer. So I went and did the secretarial course, wasn't very good at it, but then when looking for a job, I did see this advert, wanted teenage writers, and couldn't believe it, wrote up for it. And it was the Scottish firm DC Thompson's who were the next year bringing out a full colour teenage magazine, eventually called Jackie. And so I wrote them a story. And to my utter astonishment, they liked it. And even more surprisingly, I hadn't even thought about this, they paid me. I mean, it was only about £3, but still it was extraordinary to me. And so I kept writing them stories. And then they offered me a job, which was up in Dundee. And I was still only 17 at that time. And so it was a bit scary deciding to go and live. I'd never even been to Scotland at that stage. Even then, I had the sense to know you only get opportunities like this occasionally. Why not go for it? And so I did. And it was fantastic training. I worked as a junior journalist on various different women's magazines. Then got married at 19, but wrote freelance. And basically, I have been earning my own keep ever since 17, which... had to compromise sometimes and do an awful lot of magazine stuff that I didn't really want to do when I wanted to write novels. But one way or another, I kept on. I wasn't an overnight success when even my book started to get published. Eventually, it was The Story of Tracy Beaker that was my kind of breakthrough book. And after that, you know, things became much nicer.
So in your latest book, The Primrose Railway Children, yeah, which is out now, you've rewritten a classic story from the point of view of the youngest child.
That's right.
And you say that you kept in some of the grittiness instead of ending it in kind of a Enid Blyton, we all made it home for tea kind of way. What's it like to rewrite someone else's work?
Well, I won't say it's rewriting, it's reimagining it. And it was Edith Nesbit's The Railway Children, which I adored. And it's a fantastic book. And I hope my book will make some kids who read my book actually go back to the original. Rereading it as an adult, a dad is sent erroneously to prison, but because he's an English gentleman, of course, he couldn't possibly have done anything bad. And so it's all sorted out at the end. And the children go in so-called poverty to live with mother in the countryside where nobody knows them. But they still managed to have a reasonable lifestyle. And it tickled me that the mother in that book is so brave, so courageous. Even when they get to this cottage at night time and they hear rustling and it's rats. Well, anybody normal would go, oh my God, it's rats. But it was, oh, this is an adventure, children, etc. And so she irritated me a little bit. as an adult, not as a child, I just absorbed it all. And the story is told from the eldest girl's point of view for the most part, who is definitely mother's favourite, even though mother says she isn't. And then there's the boy, Peter, and then particularly in old-fashioned children's books, you know, the boy was always considered special. And then the youngest daughter in the original Railway Children book, Phyllis, all E. Nesbitt writes about her is she meant extremely well, which I always thought was...
Sounds like my school report.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So my book is written from the point of view of the youngest child who, you know, can... She has to stick up for herself because she doesn't feel that she's the favourite at all. And the person she loves more than anything is Dad. And Dad disappears, and they're not particularly, mother isn't open with the children about what's happened to Dad. It's a darker version of the original Edwardian book, but they go to live near a vintage railway, and because you can't have modern children playing a modern railway, it would be terrifying. No. And they wouldn't be allowed.
The West Coast Main Line would be a bit different,
exactly,
wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Jackie, in terms of like, so our podcast is called obviously Normal, Not Normal. So a couple of questions that we always ask is, what does normal mean to you?
I've never really felt I totally fitted in with what is normal. I mean, I'm a normal human being. I worry about things. I catastrophize if my daughter doesn't text at the usual time. I think, oh my God, what's happened to her? I do normal things like walk my dog, brush my cat. But I mean, I was married to a policeman, and I certainly wasn't a typical policeman's wife, I don't think. I've never really been the sort of typical this or that. And it used to worry me sometimes. But now I feel actually I quite like being slightly not normal.
So I've normally end with I've got something called the 3 a.m. questions, where it's basically just a quick fire thing, but mainly the right answer comes into your head at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep. It's basically just what are your favourite things. So what is your favourite book?
My favourite book is The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, and definitely I would say that's a not normal book, because it's about most people say it's about the breakdown of a college girl, and she becomes so bothered with her mental health issues, she makes a very serious suicide attempt, and then the rest of the book is about her recovering. I've recommended it to two different book groups, and they've admired the writing. It's wonderful, wonderful, beautiful writing, but said, oh, it's so depressing, and oh, who wants to read about people, you know, utterly sort of behaving so weirdly and everything. And you see, for me, I didn't think she had unusually weird behavior or anything. So I love The Bell Jar. I think it's the most fabulous book. Sylvia Plath herself, I would say, mostly was not a happy girl, and very sadly, she did eventually commit suicide. But she was a wonderful poet, and I think she will always have great followers.
What is your favourite food?
Well, last night I was at a nice arty cinema with friends, and we had a supper, and I had salad, which was delicious, and it was with sort of watermelon and pomegranates and a little bit of feta cheese, and I love that sort of food. But with it, I had a plate of chunky chips. I like that sort of food too. So it's a kind of mixture.
The yin and yang of that. Yeah.
Exactly.
What is your favourite film?
I think it has to be Thelma and Louise. I just recently rewatched it. I've seen it about 5 times. And it's not, I don't hate men at all. Literally, my best friends are men. But I just love the relationship between Thelma and Louise. And I think they've got reasons for sort of hitting the road. Well, certainly they have. And I don't condone the violence in it, but it's a cracking film and with the most amazing ending and two actresses who were just fantastic. So I don't think it can be bettered.
No, it's certainly one of the most iconic endings, I think. Even if you haven't necessarily seen the film.
Yeah, it's just great.
You'll know, that scene.
What is your favourite song?
There used to be an American woman singer called Dori Previn. Her lyrics are extraordinary. And I think her most famous songs is Mythical Kings and Iguanas, which, strange title, it's got a lot of meaning when you listen to it. And I have her CDs in the car. I still can't stream whatever you do, particularly not in our car. But she often sings us along the road.
Very good. And finally, what is your favourite quote? And that can be from a book, from a film, from anything.
Well, it's from an adaptation of my historical book, Hetty Feather. I didn't actually write it, so it's not part of my book, so I'm not being ridiculously showing off. But my Hetty meets up with this woman she'd always hoped was her mother, and she's not. But so this Madame Adeline comforts her and gives her some cake, and she says, "Everything's better with cake." And it's my motto too. If I'm really fed up or bored or sad, I forget healthy eating and eat a slice of cake. And you do cheer up. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Words to live by with that.
Yeah.
Definitely, 100%. Well, Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us this week. I've really, really enjoyed it. And thank you very much for all your time.
Oh, it's been great talking to you. Thrilled to be on your podcast.
Fantastic. Thanks again. I really, really enjoyed listening to that back.
Definitely. She's one of those people that you could speak to for hours. And she was so giving with her time. A very, very... just lovely ladies. You know, when you meet someone that you've heard of all your life and they're just as nice as you hope them to be. I'm so thankful for having her on. It was so enjoyable.
It was, yeah, a really inspirational chat. So hopefully there's people listening now who are thinking, you know what, I'd quite like to do a bit of writing. I've got a similar process to Jacqueline's writing process, you know, how she's literally, you know, starts a new book when she's literally just finishing the last one, and there's just stuff always going on and on and on. But also as well, on the side of things, talking about how she established a new life and a love life later in life, you know, just shows that, you know, just being comfortable who you are and doing what's good for you, you know, is truly, truly inspiring stuff.
Definitely. It's one of those things where I think it proves if you ever feel like you're not in the right place, then you can change it. And it was interesting as well how it was made such a big thing in the press at the time. And like she was saying, like everyone that needed to know already knew. So it was, do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter what the rest of the world think.
Mm.
Before we leave, I got a couple of did you know facts. So I was inspired by, obviously, The Railway Children. That's one of my favourite books as a kid. So I'm really excited to read Jacqueline's version of it. But I thought I could do a couple of did you know facts about trains. That's right. Grab your bobble hat, stand at the end of a platform and train spot with me. So
sounds like a terrible song.
This is interesting, okay? Did you know the word train comes from a French verb which means to draw or drag?
Right.
There you go. Monorails feature a single rail and are elevated from the ground. That's what makes it a monorail.
As in The Simpsons, mono means one.
And rail means rail.
Yes, yes, yes.
Trains are in films a lot and all that kind of stuff. So there's a fight scene in the Bond movie Skyfall, which was actually filmed on an actual moving train. Very dangerous, but it looked very cool. That was my did you know fact.
Very good.
And let's get this back on track. Did you like that one? It's very good.
Yes.
Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us this week. We had such an amazing time, and I really do hope that everybody listening was inspired by her story. And also, obviously, send in your story times, your questions, your did you knows. Keep sending them in. normalnotnormalpodcast@gmail.com. And next week, we'll get them on. Guys, thank you so much for joining us this week. I'm James Phelps.
I'm Oliver Phelps. And just one more time, as James has just said, in Train Talk, the Normal Not Normal podcast locomotive will be pulling gently into your Storytime station next week. That is awful, isn't it?
Normal Not Normal is a Stable production.